engineering has as great an opportunity as any other profession to advance in this decade if it will keep in mind at least one basic fact in terms of how engineering will influence society in this decade. All you've really got to put together are a couple of things. One, that our social systems now have been having, let's say since World War II, an increasing technological base. The engineer, over the years, has been trained to cope with that. He has not been trained in his normal curriculum to cope with the fact that those technological systems are also social systems. And as a result, other specialties have rushed in. The social psychologist has rushed in, the liberal arts person has rushed in and has said, I have a kind of a background in the humanities and the like. I can cope with people better than you engineers. I don't think they can. It's only a question of whether the engineers wish to build an overlay upon their technological base of applying their technology through people. And if they do, I think you're going to find in the 70s, the manager that American industry is really going to look to find is the guy who, first of all, really understands the technological function of that enterprise and then learns how to work with people to get that thing accomplished. The engineer's got a leg up on everybody else if you'll put that together.
Let me just take a crack at it. On two different occasions, we've had comments about the declining engineering enrollment. I haven't seen this. The figures for 1970 were something like 922,000. For 1969, it was 881,000. And I have checked with just a few engineering schools, and there hasn't been that much of a decrease in the people who are interested, who are applying, and they don't see, at least the ones that I've checked with, any decline in this, unless there's some particular figures that you're aware of.
Two-year figures from a good Midwestern engineering school, and I just picked these up from a professor involved last night, a decrease from 600 to 450 in undergraduate enrollment, and from 300 to 150 in graduate enrollment. And this is a good school.
You have something else?
Yes, NYU reported recently, about 3 weeks ago, that their undergraduate enrollment as of last September was down 16%. They indicated in the article that this was substantially better than the decline reported in other schools in the metropolitan New York area and some of the Midwestern schools that they had contact. They are, in this vein, they are instituting a program of reimbursing 50% of the tuition or matching
So you're saying that it's down 16% in 1970?
Registration for freshmen in 1970, September, was down 16%, and they indicated that this was substantially better than the decline of other schools that they contacted.
Well, I guess
we should also keep in mind that we have approximately 9,000 foreign students a year coming into the schools, into the state, and this last year created a tremendous bulge in graduate enrollment. And this year it'll create that same bulge, but I think by next year, when this job shortage gets around, that flow will be stemmed. And that effect has made a temporary increase that a lot of people are overlooking.
I see.
Also, these statistics may be influenced by the continuing growth of state-supported engineering schools that may or may not be properly accredited.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the figures you had were in the middle of 1970. People were committed to go to engineering schools by June of the previous year. You know, you got about another half year time lag before the recession really hit. I just know personally that the evening division at City College Rockwood, who wrote, these are people working in, at the daytime and going to school at night. Some of them work for the apartment.
I think the question the question was, what is engineering going to be like in the 70s? I think what we've answered so far is perhaps, what is the enrollment going to look like in the 70s? Al sort of got at part of this through his idea that an engineer must broaden his basic tools. In almost any type of profession, there is a continual retraining process, there is a continual obsolescing. I think it's important for each one of us as engineers to recognize that this process is just as natural as the aging process. As creative people, and as people driven by Maslow's needs and other psychological factors, that it is during the learning process, it is during the steep period of learning, that this creativity, this satisfaction, this drive receives its greatest satisfaction. And as engineers, I think we need to look for places where this kind of opportunity can be opened up. Now, this may very well mean that it's necessary for you to shift your career. I'd like to add another example to this Peter Principle discussion. That is, there is nothing wrong with shifting your career. As a matter of fact, I've had three separate unique careers in my professional life already, and I hope I'm not finished. As a matter of fact, it's a very exciting and very challenging way of keeping current. But to say that we're afraid to step out into the future, we're afraid to step out and accept something that isn't like what we've done before, doesn't sound very constructive, doesn't sound really like what engineering is all about. I'd like to suggest that engineering in the future can be just as satisfying and perhaps far more relevant than it has ever been in the past. But it can only be so if each and every one of us introduce in our own actions, in our own efforts, the kind of quality, the kind of participation, the kind of commitment that suggests both an understanding and a willingness to move in this direction.
I think you're talking about shifts, but not shifts out of engineering or engineering management in your case.
Basically, yes. Shifting in
from one basic, job environment, not
the basic technical package, even. Yeah. I forgot who's next. The one point is that the American corporation is drifting the state of capitalistic communism. Feudal corporate communism. The other question is that there should be a judicial restraint on management, such as perhaps an ombudsman who could view technical contribution in a relative sense, make a judgment with regard to the value of that particular contribution. Anybody want to try it?
I don't know if this is helpful or not. I do have to say I disagree with your analogy that executive levels in industry are that's a middle management kind of a concept, and there ought to be somebody above them. I think maybe what you're after will emerge in another way. I think it is fair to say that much of the strength of American industry has been built on a competitive principle, on a theory that there is, in effect, a competitive trial between equal individuals, and then finally the inequality is demonstrated in some fashion, and one person goes up and the other goes out or down. In modern organization, increasingly that doesn't quite fit, because, as I said earlier, we're dealing with highly technological, interdependent systems. And as a result, you have to get a lot of people in on the act. Now, much of the present decisions on whether people go up or out, or up or out or down, are sort of one-to-one decisions. In other words, a member of upper management or executive management decides, perhaps in consultation with his boss, as to whether one individual employee stays in or goes up or goes out. I think what will be emerging is increasingly decisions about who are the effective members in the organization. Those decisions will come about on the basis of information which is pooled from members of the team rather than just members of the executive management. And that's the way additional information will influence the retention or promotion of people. I don't think it'll come through any outside judiciary, through some sort of arbitration above the level of executive management. That's a management responsibility. It may be shared downward, but it will not be shared externally. My only comment is I also don't think they have responsibility. I would be very loath to advise a corporation with whom we were assisting that they should create an offline group that in effect had a veto appeal over line decisions with respect.
Any other questions? Yes, sir.
My name is Jack Siegler. I'm a manager of engineering services for Frederick Refrigerators in San Antonio, Texas. In listening, this problem that exists today, I have been disappointed also with the present situation. The show is a disappointment to me as far as not being able to see four floors and not being able to see some of my friends in the aerospace industry. I enjoy this trip to New York because I used to work for General Precision Aerospace. I'm now in the appliance industry. you know, we can look back, and depending upon how we look back and what we do about it is going to determine where we're going to go in the 70s. Now, we can look back and sit down and cry about it, or we can take a look at where we're at. And this is a problem that is I'm confronted with, some questions that I would personally like to have the answer to. I was an electronics design engineer, and we had a new vice president come in the company, and he's only been there 4 months. But I have a lot of respect for this man, and he showed me that as a design engineer, I was limited. And he suggested I look into expanding my technical background and to get into an engineering services group. And my basic responsibility is to make the job better for the engineer. There isn't anyone that can understand an engineer better than an engineer. And however, let me get to my two questions, and that is, who is responsible? I'd like to direct this to our group. Who is responsible for ensuring jobs for all engineers, those presently unemployed, those presently students, and future students? And the second question is, who is responsible for stimulating the engineering profession?
This is a roughie. I'll just make some comments just to lead off here. And I don't know if there's any answer, at least the first one. Who is responsible for ensuring jobs for all engineers? I don't know that we've ever had a system in the United States that's ensured jobs for everyone. We hope that there's an opportunity for everyone. But I guess but as far as ensuring that everyone, all engineers, are going to get a job in engineering, I don't know that we have, that anyone has said this. And the second part, I guess I'm just raising my own questions, my own doubts here on this, let's say. The second part was, what was the second part there? It was
trying to stimulate.
Yeah. How do you stimulate the engineering profession? And quite frankly, in this, I don't have any particular thoughts other than the fact that this is something that the societies themselves are going to have to do work on. Yeah?
I'd like to make one comment here on your question. Who is going to assure a manager that he has his job? I think if you look at the management side of the stick, the attrition in management, not just recently, but over the years, has been significantly higher than in the engineering area. It seems to me that much of what the engineering profession is going through today is simply catching up with the rest of the world. We have people in our factory who, hourly workers, who have been laid off because of the reductions in activity in various production areas. Those people have taken this layoff in a very constructive and a very mature way. We've had engineers and managers who have undergone similar terminations, have been cut back. They have been completely floored. I think the problem that lies with us today is one of realism, that this is not a growth economy where we can put an ever-growing 10, 15, 20 pounds in the same bag. And that this is something that, getting back to the competitive situation, is is part of the selective process. Just because a person goes to an engineering school doesn't make him an engineer or a good engineer. By the same token, just because a person goes to a medical college doesn't make him a good doctor. I think we have to recognize the duality of this responsibility. And if we have erred in terms of selecting our careers, then I think we better face up to it, my friends, and say, buddy, I made a mistake, and tell it true to yourself, and not condemn somebody else for being wrong in getting you started in a particular direction.
Could I just, I'm sorry, perhaps I didn't lead up to that. In other words, leading to the question, what are we going to do? What do we do now? What is management's responsibility right now? And what is the engineer's responsibility right now? We look back and see these things, and I agree with everything you said. We can sit back, we can stand here and cry about it, but what can the engineer do about it? And what does management do? What's their responsibility right now?
I think in your particular case, it's a very good example of moving a man into another position that is perhaps more appropriate for his particular interests at this particular time. I hope what I was suggesting was a positive approach, a positive response, that each of us reassess, reevaluate, reinterpret our goals and objectives as individuals. Maybe we're in the wrong profession. Maybe we're in the wrong place at this time in our lives. We better change. Yes, I know. Well, it was not too long. We got a couple of calls back here that are getting on.
Well, I submit that we've been through a period when government-funded activities have tended to take the cream of the technical output and the available engineers and scientists off of the top. And as a result, the rest of industry has had to take a back seat in this picture. And I submit that we have two problems. Recognizing that these people have been robbed of available ability, and educating them to the fact that the this ability is available to them now, and to perhaps stop their worrying about the fact that they might lose them back again to the military-funded areas again in the next year or so, convince them that this is a long-term picture, that these qualified people are available now and they will be available, that we've changed our priorities. And I'm sure that general industry, recognizing this and being educated to it, will take up the slack.
Yes, sir. You've been very patient.
I would like to express an opinion and then try to reorient a little the discussion to a smaller type of situation than what we've been dwelling on. I think the engineering problem has been well identified by the gentleman prior to me making a comment about the exhibition is here. Also, I think that the Peter principle was mentioned. There's an additional principle that I forget, it starts with an M, I don't recall, but even if you try, that you're going to be technologically obsolete in 10 years anyway, or maybe a shorter period. But I think there's a very significant tie-in between these two, and that is that, okay, we have trouble The engineers have trouble keeping abreast of these things, and anybody that's my age will recognize this particular aspect of it. But I think the fact that there aren't too many jobs will just even bring it to a stronger head, and I think there are solutions to these things. What concerns me, there are various factors, but one of them is the attraction of young engineering graduates, okay? I don't think it's the same way with teachers. You can say what you want, but there are people that are not finding the jobs that they set out to be. Now, whether they're qualified or whether they shouldn't have been so narrowly directed, but by and large, the engineering profession, it isn't a wide open street that'll track the number of creative people that we need to have to be competitive in our society. So I think that, number one, the government spending, if that goes down, I think the IEEE and people like that should make a concerted effort to influence and provide public information to get the sentiments, and I know there's been a lot of work on it. I'm sure that you people up there are quite knowledgeable, try to get more space programs and so forth so that this situation wouldn't occur. But regardless, we haven't succeeded, and there has to be more effort. I think engineering management has a job to look at that if this does happen in every few years, they're going to be obsolete. I propose maybe a rotational job situation or something. I'm sure you've tried programs, but you've got to do something. If the engineer today knows that unless he makes management or gets in a big company where they have a dual ladder, he's going to be facing the prospects of changing his profession, okay? So I think you've got to give him, we're looking further now, and we want to see where we're going to go. And I think it's engineering management's responsibility to advise management, and this is what I would like to get to the interface problem here, of what the technological requirements are in terms of, we can't control the government spending, okay? That's another thing. That's a news and a big support problem. That's a total population. But as far as individual large company type of thing, I think it's up to us to instruct management so we do have the or try to advise them so we do have a proper apportionment of engineering effort. In my particular area, this is my opinion, I think there are solutions, and I think we should act accordingly to try to bring them about. You were talking about various large numbers of engineering people and so forth. I like to relate to, half a dozen engineers, a small company. We are a materialistic society, and what we make has to be a saleable commodity, and so we do depend upon marketing quite heavily. I think that I would like to ask the question of the panel of, we talked about motivating engineers, about security, about job satisfaction, and so forth. What is your opinion of selling top management or selling management with engineering productivity? I personally have been having a little problem, and I don't know whether it's peculiar to me or not, but for example, if sales are just going flat, somebody's going to say, why aren't we growing? And somebody says, well, we're not getting the engineering output. I would like to have a little comment on there if I could.
The standpoint of engineering productivity. The general business that I'm in has, even though it is a recognized monopoly, has a great deal of competition among the various operating companies. And there is a little book that comes out once a month which shows various indices for the types of effort that took place during the preceding month. This little book is green, and it's known as the Green Hornet. There's many a president that's felt its sting.
The thing that is of interest here is that here we have such items which can be quantized, such as the numbers of telephones that have been installed, for example, the numbers of long-distance calls per 24-hour period, the amount of equipment that we have, dollars spent in certain ways. The hardest problem that we have, and one that we don't have an answer to, quite frankly, is the one that you raise. How do you measure engineering productivity? You can quantize certain things that people do, but then you get into this element of the quality of the engineering job. And quite frankly, gentlemen, we're having a rough time with this. In fact, we're really saying that we don't quite know how to go at this to get any kind of an indicator that could be meaningful as a comparison among the operating telephone companies. It's, once again, I don't have any particular words for you of hope or encouragement from the standpoint of the measurement of productivity, particularly when you start getting into this quality situation. Quantity, yes, you can do. But we can fall into a problem if we just measure quantity from an engineering productivity standpoint. Negative, but that's what it is.
Al or Jack? Tackle this one?
I don't think on the engineering productivity thing I want to comment specifically, except maybe to broaden it. If he says if he's got troubles putting any quantities on engineering, I would have to comment that from the work that I've been in more recently, which is engaged in organization development work, essentially with industrial clients, I would have to say that there are a lot more problems in developing any productivity criteria, engineering or not, than I had believed to be the case before I started to work with these clients. Let me be specific so you can understand what I'm talking about. In the field of, let's say, organizational development, where you're trying to apply certain systems of management that have been based upon organizational research, we're quite prepared in dealing with a client to say that we can measure in very precise terms the way your human organization operates. And we're perfectly prepared to say to the client that we'll be willing to bet that the differences in leadership style and the differences in the way your works group work together, which can be quantified, but those are predictive factors as to what your productivity will be 6 months and 1 year down the line. Well, that intrigues management. We say, now all you've got to do to take up that gamble is you've got to be willing to give us productivity criteria against those same measures. We're not going to tell you what that criteria are. All we want to say is you give us the criteria by which you actually make those executive decisions of whether that's a good engineering manager or an indifferent engineering manager. And at the start of the project, they say, sure, we got that, we got that, we got that. And all I can say is the farther you go down the line, you find out that most productivity information that you furnish, that's good only in a very highly constrained situation. You're willing to, let's take in a production outfit, you're willing to deal with absenteeism or grievances as a given rate to be reported to the personnel office, but not to the executive line management as a method of whether a plant manager gets promoted. So I'm saying if you've got difficulty getting productivity measures in engineering, I think there are difficulties, not equal, but they're there, getting production information too.
Well, I agree. It's certainly hard to to measure productivity, but I should think in this group, particularly in the electronics industry, it should be pretty clear at this point in time that that there well may be a problem in productivity. And I say that because I look at the effect of foreign products, Japanese in particular, and there's certainly one way of measuring productivity in the end, and that is comparing the prices of comparable products. So I think a lot of this skill that with our changing national goals that have been moved from aerospace might well find very challenging jobs in the electronics industry, and using our engineering and technical skills to allow us to either do better production, more productive engineering, what have you, to handle some of those threats.
Let's have the gentleman right behind you first, okay?
I'm Ed Hayden from the Department of Commerce. I'd like to draw an analogy between engineering and management. Being an engineer, I know a little more about that. But I think in an engineering sense, one can perhaps set in perspective a management problem here. Engineers are well acquainted with the difference between the transient solution to, say, a circuit problem and the steady-state solution. The steady-state solution often is a very much easier thing to achieve than the transient solution. Yet what we're faced with here in the engineering profession at the moment is handling a transient situation. And I suggest that perhaps one of the things that we need to put much management emphasis on is the learning of transient solutions to management problems, or the solutions to transient management problems, put the thing in the right kind of grammar. Not being a manager at the moment, although I have had that task in the past, I'm curious as to what sorts of efforts are being made in this line, if you gentlemen know of any, where one might get his hands on the results of some of these things and so on. It seems to me that really the thing that's hurting now is the change from one state to another state. And if we can learn how to make those transitions under circumstances, well, like a servo man would say, where the system is kept stable, where it isn't allowed to go into uncontrolled and capricious responses, where there's bound to be some pain in the transition anyway, because it's likely to be fast. But if the uncontrolled and capricious responses can be handled by management techniques, this would be a tremendous boon to the engineer as well as to the manager.
Okay, one more question.
A real guilt complex. This isn't really a question, but it might turn out to be one. I'm David Ashland. I'm with Ford Motor Company. The question raised about the differences between the legal and medical profession and the engineering profession is one that I've given a great deal of thought to. I haven't got very many good answers, but I agree with the ideas that have been brought out so far. I think there's another one in that both of those professions have a discipline established that you have to complete before you can practice the profession. You have the bar association, you have the various state associations for licensing physicians. I'm a registered professional engineer, and at one time when I started out in this profession, I felt that the activity of the National Society of Professional Engineers would hopefully raise the status of engineering to something approaching that of the other two professions I've mentioned. It now appears that the way things are going, this isn't really going to come about unless a couple things occur, one of which is going to be a great deal more interest on the part of engineers as a whole in a more professional outlook toward engineering, which certainly has not been evidenced to date. We have been a pretty, speaking as engineers, I hope not, rather categorically, I know that there are definite exceptions, we have been, like the rest of mankind, a pretty greedy lot looking out for our own interests in the past. Okay, that's one aspect. Another idea that came to my mind is that these other two professions are not without their own problems, and the idea brought out about the problems in the medical profession is very good. There is also a movement within the some of the minority legal organizations saying we rarely ought to do away with the bar exams and so on. Anybody who can go through 6 or 7 years of school and get a law degree ought to be qualified to practice, much the same that anybody who can go through 4 or 5 or 6 years of engineering school ought to be qualified to practice. So I guess this is an age of power to the people. We all want to be able to plead our own cases before a court of law without having to pay the attorney. The attorney wants to be able to plead cases based on his own merit without having to deal through an organization. And so while our pendulum seems to be, many of us would like to push our pendulum towards a stronger organization and more professionalism through that organization, some of these other professions seem to be riding the hammer that, or the pendulum that's swinging just the other way. Well, I guess I don't really have a question, but I would be interested in any comments that anyone would care to make in that whole general area. Thank you.
How do they react? Well, I think that perhaps Peter Drucker has some good words for us about something like that, about what's going to be coming up in the future. This is crystal balling, and in no sense is a prediction. But he suggests that companies and institutions will hold themselves accountable for the quality of life. And through organizational development, adapt to the needs, aspirations, and potential of individuals. This development, however, is a matter of human energies. And it's management's task to generate and provide the direction for these human energies. I think it's at this interface that we come to the problem that we've talked about this afternoon. I'd like to thank you for your kind participation, your attention, and hope that you've gotten something out of it. I think each of us on the panel has. We'd like to thank you for your time. See you.